Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Final hour of the show. Great to have you with us. Neil Coulong in just a few moments. Ben Jones in the final half hour, and we'll also hear the assessments of Mike Mayock on some of the Penn State players with the upcoming NFL Combine, which is taking place in Indianapolis. Lady Lion basketball team just underway against Illinois in Indianapolis. In the opening round of the Big Ten tournament, the winner will take on Michigan tomorrow. Nittany Lion basketball team tomorrow will take on Northwestern at 6:30. We're on beginning at 6 o'clock. Tomorrow's show will be from Manhattan and will include Joey Brackets. Our old friend Joe Lenardi is going to join us on the show and give us his impression of what the bracket looks like with the Big Ten tournament beginning. And we'll talk to Joe Lenardi on tomorrow's show. Also, Jeff Byers on tomorrow's show as well from Manhattan, leading into Penn State and Northwestern at Madison Square Garden in New York. So that's what we have coming up today and also coming up tomorrow. First of all, our play-by-play call of the day. Drama last night in Chapel Hill. North Carolina ties it at home, only to then end up on the losing end.
Yeah, you have to have it now.
Berry takes it for three.
He got it off. That is good. They have to look at it, but he got it off.
On senior night in Chapel Hill, it's the senior from the Hurricanes who wins it. How about that finish? How about that game?
Indeed, it was a great game, a great finish, and for North Carolina, losing to Miami, and Miami's been playing really well of late, really well. And, of course, Adam Fisher, the former Penn State basketball manager. Adam was the head manager for 3 years with his old friend Pete Borty, Pete Borty Jr. And Adam got into coaching and eventually was able to hook on with Jim Larrañaga. And Adam's the top assistant for Jim Larrañaga now at Miami. That's a big win for them. For Miami, going into Chapel Hill and winning that game. And Lonnie Walker out of Reading won a game for them at Boston College. I think last week he did that, didn't he? So that was a dramatic finish. North Carolina ties it, and then Miami wins it. Reminiscent, really almost the exact same scenario. Almost the exact same scenario as Penn State at Ohio State. Joel Berry tied it with a three at home. Kata Bates-Diop tied it with a three at home. Then Miami came down the floor. Walker hit a three going the other way from about 30, 35 feet. Tony Carr banked in 30, 35 feet for the road team to win it. Almost the same scenario as that night in Columbus. All right, let's get to Neil Coulong. Plenty to talk about with him, including the combine. So let's get to it. Neil, great to have you with us, as always, my friend.
It's interesting that you say that, because I was literally just doing that.
Of course you were. I know you. I know what you're doing. My goodness, we've got all sorts of info about you. All right, when you look at them, Neil, what are you seeing?
It's really, there isn't a surefire guy. I probably said the same thing last year, and I think that makes me, perhaps embittered and jaded toward the position going forward. I could see none of them working out, and I could see all of them working out. There's a lot of different reasons for both, but the most solid guy, I'm not even sure who that would be at this point. The combine will probably show something. I think pro days will probably show something. You're going to want to see their athleticism. I think with that, you'll see the hating crowd on Allen probably decline a little bit just due to the fact that he's going to show up in a big way athletically. And Lamar Jackson, I think, can probably take a couple steps forward because he's going to put together a blistering workout, I'm sure. I don't think anybody, you know, really needs to be convinced of the level of athleticism that that guy has. But I think you're going to see a prospect who could find his way into the first round, despite the fact that he is kind of small. He's probably not an ideal thrower. He's got some work that he needs to do. I don't think it'd be in anybody's best interest for him to start next season. But I think he's an intriguing prospect. And to be honest, who else is there? I mean, you know, Josh Rosen, I think, is probably the best prototypical quarterback. There's a lot of good things that he has going for him. Allen is going to, you know, he makes just the arm strength that he right. has, the athleticism that he has. Darnold, I'm not really big on. I think a team's probably going to overdraft him just because he has all of the prototypical traits, except, you know, to me, he didn't really put it on the field. There just really aren't very many quarterbacks. I think we even talked about this last year before the draft. There aren't very many quarterbacks who have success in the NFL who didn't in college. You know, right. It's kind of weird. It's the most important position. If this guy is that good, why didn't his team win all that much? You know, it really, if you're that good of a quarterback, you're going to make your team win in college. It's
That's the Jared Goff syndrome. Right? He's kind of overcome that a little bit because it's very rare. You're right. Like, okay, well, if he's such a great quarterback, how come they didn't win? When I see Rosen, I see the best mechanics of any of them, but not the strongest arm. I see Darnold throwing a lot of three quarters. I see Allen having an absolute cannon, but nobody knows where it's going. And then there's Baker Mayfield that off the field, you don't know where he's going. So, that's what I see.
Yeah, that's file it. Send it into the GM. I mean, I think that's pretty much what the buzz is going to be about all of those players. And, you know, Jackson and Mayfield are probably the ones that a team might draft in the first round just to have that fifth-year option
right.
at a low salary, assuming they work out. As far as Allen goes, everyone was really impressed with Jamarcus Russell's arm, too. And I can definitely see why, but it has to come down to his ability to want to improve. I consider that an ability because Jamarcus Russell didn't work at it. And the reason I compare the two is because they're both big-bodied guys with absolute howitzers for right arms.
Yeah.
And that's going to be his biggest trait. You can't train that, but you can mold somebody from a physical standpoint. You can make them better, which Allen is going to need a lot of wherever yeah. it is that he ends up going, by improving their footwork. And Russell just simply never put in the time. He wasn't really all that interested in playing football. He took his money, and that was just kind of it for him. Allen, I think the rep on him is he does have probably a bit better work ethic,
right.
but there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Because nobody recruited him out of Sacramento. Nobody recruited him except for Craig Bohl.
There's a reason.
Yeah.
There's a reason. Interesting footnote, Craig Bohl was the guy that recruited Carson Wentz
from
North Dakota State.
Yep.
So, obviously, I'm favoring him, except Allen, he's somebody that I think got on the radar in a big way last year, and people kind of saw this coming. You expected much more out of him at Wyoming this past season than he got.
Yeah.
And that has to really disappoint a lot of people. It seems like he should be a lot better than he is.
I actually saw Allen play against Eastern Michigan. I had a speaking engagement there that night, so I actually saw him play in person. You can see all the traits you're talking about. But here's the part that would bother me. Remember, you made the statement about winning records of quarterbacks, right? If you take the NFL rating system, when he has faced a Power 5 team, he's only 31.7 in those games.
Yeah, it's really just he is probably as close to the definition of a raw product as you're going to get. And the tools obviously are there in a lot of ways. He hasn't put all of them together. If you take away his arm, if you give him even just an above-average arm and not an excellent arm, an A-plus arm, he's not a draft pick. You know, it's just way too much work without the comparable weapon to make it worth your while. Whatever team takes him has to be at the beginning of like a 5-year plan.
No doubt.
There's a lot of work that he's going to need. And with that, too, you're going to need a veteran for 3 years. So to me, it's more like this is probably if it's me, if I'm picking in the 20s, maybe, you know, I'd probably look at that, the Aaron Rodgers syndrome. Do you need a quarterback right now? No, but this is a really good one, and you're going to need one here coming up. Let's develop him. Let's let him learn. Obviously, it worked out well for the Packers, but typically, Aaron Rodgers isn't found in any draft, let alone in the 20s. It's really, really hard to find anybody later, which is why I really like Pat Mahomes. I was a big fan of his in college. I figure he'll be successful. I'm not at all surprised that the Chiefs traded up as much as they did to draft him where they did. I don't necessarily think he was the 10th best player in that draft, but he's the type of guy that you want as a quarterback. And whether you're taking, whether you're drafting 5th, 15th, or 25th, that's a quarterback that your franchise needs. You have to take him. So that's why you get a lot of quarterbacks that are going to be overdrafted. Whichever team that's going to do that in the top 10 with Allen, and it could be the first overall pick, they're going to have the work cut out for him, and they're still going to need a quarterback next season.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is he may not be the 10th overall player in the draft, but he is if you need him. If you need him, he's the 10th overall pick in the draft. It just depends on what you think you need at that time. Where's our guy Le'Veon Bell doing? Where's his contract right now?
That's kind of funny. We haven't heard from Le'Veon in a little while, which is a little bit different. I don't think we went before that more than 3 days without hearing something.
Yeah.
I guess there was Michael B. Jordan said that he would have been the perfect Black Panther. I thought that was kind of interesting. maybe that's what he'll do. But for where he is right now for the negotiation, I think the fact that I haven't yet, I think that speaks to an ongoing negotiation. I think it's a sign by the Steelers to show good faith. Our ideal situation here is not to tag you. We're not looking to do that. We want to sign a long-term deal, but we'll tag you when we have to. So we're giving this, you give that. Eventually they'll come to an agreement on what I think I would expect to be a pretty big contract with probably a few interesting provisions in it, just considering his past and possible, concerns about injury just due to the workload that he's going to have. Those details probably take a bit longer than the actual dollar amount of the contract to work out. So I'm not surprised they don't have anything today, but I do think you'll hear something right before free agency starts, whether that's a new extension or the tag. They're not going to let him go now. No guarantees that they wouldn't pull the tag off him eventually, but I think where they are now, they want a long-term deal. I would think that Bell would be open to that.
Does Sean Davis regret going to Chick-fil-A?
That story cracks me up. I would imagine players do stuff like that probably more often than they should. And
yes,
you'd think that you'd hear more situations in which there was some retaliation for it. And I don't necessarily know how he's going to get off the hook for this.
I don't either.
The litany of charges that they're making, it's like, wow, it is kind of coordinated. You guys really spent your time on this. It's a dumb thing to do, plain and simple. At the same time, I don't think this is even the point, simply because of the backlash that the kid allegedly got at school. The point he was making was simply about the restaurant. Which
right.
I also thought was funny because I don't think I ever, waited for a significant amount of time in line at Chick-fil-A.
I know I haven't. I've always actually raved about how quickly you get through there.
Yeah. Yeah, they're the best. When it comes to, customer service,
yeah.
You go to any Chick-fil-A, the place, it runs like clockwork.
I
put it up next to, In-N-Out Burger in L.A. It would be, but it's great.
Okay, In-N-Out Burger may be good, and you and I both have gone to In-N-Out Burger, but for goodness sakes, don't pretend like it's, quote, fast food. I mean, really. Fast is not exactly the word you'd use there. Chick-fil-A, you kind of fly through the line, but he took a video of this thing, right? And he uploaded it, right? That's where
he put it on Snapchat, and with that, he made some comments about the kid looking younger. That was really the crux of it. But his complaint was just how long he had to wait there.
Right.
That said, the alleged charge that the kid wants to bring on Davis is that he caused him emotional distress because a bunch of kids at school saw it and started making fun of him for it. Like, you're going to have a tough time escaping that, Sean. Really?
Yeah. That is going to be an issue.
You shouldn't post stuff.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I would say if I was an agent, if I was a coach. It's like, I can't make you do it, but you really just shouldn't do it. You've got nothing to gain from this. If you do, don't be stupid. Don't make fun of people. Don't be negative. Just, do you. Make fun of yourself, but don't do anything else.
I mean, if you're at a group of friends at a party, yes. Social media, no. All right.
It doesn't go away.
No, it's just sitting right there. It's sitting right there.
You look at it, you made one video for Snapchat, and you were facing a civil lawsuit. And this is something that's now going to create your reputation in the league, just 2 years into your career, and probably nobody outside of Pittsburgh even knows who you are.
Right.
To do all of that, and you hope it was worth it.
Yeah.
Really, it's not even all that funny. It's not witty. it's just kind of a dumb thing to do, and he's going to get probably burned for it. I'm sure he's going to have to settle to some degree. You don't want to take that on in public court.
No. You know, one thing I do, this will be the last part, I'll let you go, that I always find interesting about the combine. We always hear all the time about all the Southern speed. And we're told game in and game out how fast X happens to be. And then they get in the combine and they're 4.53. You're like, really? But over and over and over. Now you and I both know Indianapolis is sort of a slow track, but still.
I think when you're seeing guys crack off like 4.15 on their tracks in their Southern college, I get where that's coming from. But for me, this segues well. I'm glad I'm talking to you about this. For me, 40 times, I get it. It's more like I want to make sure that this guy does run 4.5 and not 4.8.
Exactly.
Right? But if you want speed, if you want a measurement of speed, watch that touchdown that Barkley scored in the bowl game.
Yeah.
Watch him run down the sideline. I don't care what he's going to 40 at. What I know is in pads, that guy can fly.
Right.
So I don't need really anything more than that. If I'm Cleveland, in all honesty, I'm probably just going to take him number one because I'm not going to get him at four. I don't want to trade back up, and I would love to have this guy on my team on the cheap for 4 years.
To be honest, Penn State fans are not going to like what I'm going to say here, but if I'm Cleveland, I do take him one because I can still get my quarterback at four. One of them.
Yeah,
one of them
exactly
will be there.
Are you telling me any one of these guys, you don't think they're worth the fourth pick?
I mean, there is
two of them they're going to go. I'll take the other
right.
one.
There's no quarterback in this draft that's worth like, whoa, okay, hey, if I don't get him, we're in trouble. You could pick any one of those guys at four, and I think you'll be okay, but still developing. Barkley is a generational player.
If I was Cleveland, what I would do is take Barkley, and depending on how 2 and 3 went,
yeah,
I would strongly think about taking Jackson at four. Could you imagine the amount of versatility in a backfield that you could have? I don't think Jackson starts year one, but how many Band-Aid starters are there? I mean, Cleveland has won one game in 2 years. You know, where are they going next year? You just added what's going to be the most dynamic offensive player in football in 2 years with Barkley. If you get Jackson to throw accurately, you work on his footwork, you can run, hire Darrell Bevell, not Todd Haley.
run the option.
What he did in Seattle.
Right.
Run, basically just RPO everything.
Right.
You could totally get away with that backfield. And from there, you've got a ton of picks to add other firepower on offense. That offense would be dangerous quickly.
I asked Dwight Gault, the strength and conditioning coach at Penn State. I said, we always see everybody run 40s. And, of course, they're running in shorts and a T-shirt. I said, what about pads? And he said, no, I've done that. He said, and consistently, Barkley's 4.33. Consistently, it's 0.2, right? That's what he told me, his research is. So he'd be 4.53 with pads. And the guy that's running 4.5 would be 4.7.
Yeah, exactly. That's really more what you look at.
Right.
It bumps it down on a curve. But with Barkley, it really just doesn't look like he's even wearing pads. It's a weird thing, but he's just moving at such an insane level.
Yeah.
Such a he's an athlete. He's the definition of an athlete. You watch him run. He has his body through air. It's weird, but people can't do what he does. And watch him. It's like he's going to be a remarkable player.
Believe me, I've seen 1,000 carries.
I don't know why I'm even telling you.
Okay. I've seen 1,000 of them between practice and games. First time I saw him, I called Jack Ham up. I said, you got to get up here this weekend. He said, why? I said, you got to watch this kid run. As soon as he saw him, he looked at me and went, whoa. That was his freshman year. Neil, thanks. Appreciate it, as always.
Definitely. Thanks for having me.
Neil Coulong, USA Today, as we break down the combine in Indianapolis. And Penn State will be well represented. Coming up in the next half hour, the thoughts of Mike Mayock on several of the Nittany Lion players at the combine in Indianapolis, including Saquon Barkley, Jason Kabinda, Marcus Allen, Deshaun Hamilton will be some of the players that will get the evaluation of Mike Mayock of NFL Network about, plus Ben Jones from statecollege.com on Penn State basketball. The opening game for Penn State in the Big Ten tournament will be tomorrow when they take on Northwestern at 6:30, and we'll be on at 6 o'clock from Madison Square Garden in New York. Coming up tomorrow on the show, Joe Lenardi. Tomorrow's show will be in New York. Tomorrow we'll have Joe Lenardi. Bracketology from ESPN's Joe Lenardi, although Joe's going to be in a pretty good mood. Joe, of course, been the analyst for years for St. Joe's. They went to Kingston last night, and they ripped apart Rhode Island. last night at the Ryan Center. I mean, ripped them apart. Rhode Island's ranked 17th in the country. St. Joe's won by 30 last night, 78-48. Amazing. Well, Joe Lenardi will be on the show tomorrow. Jeff Byers tomorrow on the Big Ten Wrestling Championships. We'll get Jeff on the show tomorrow. So we're looking forward to that as we bring you the show from Madison Square Garden. All right. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Come back with the final half hour of the show, including Mike Mayock and also Ben Jones, here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome back. Final half hour of the show. Big show coming up tomorrow from New York. Joe Lenardi from ESPN will be on. We'll break down the brackets with Joe Lenardi. Joe gives us time every year. He's very choosy about what shows that he does. He picks this show every year. That's, of course, you know, because we go back a long way. Plus, obviously, what really, you know, let's be honest about it, his friendship with Dick Girardi opened the door for me to get to know Joe a little bit better, too. So he's going to join us on the show tomorrow to break down the bracket, because next week all the conferences have their tournaments going. The Big Ten's the one that's finishing up this weekend. I mean, it's, you know, as I said to somebody, I think it was Dana O'Neill. I said to Dana, I said, the Big Ten is on the same cycle as the Atlantic Sun. But to get into Madison Square Garden this year, that's what they had to do. That'll be Joe Lenardi tomorrow. But we can't forget about the Big Ten Wrestling Championships taking place at Michigan State. So Jeff Byers will be on the show tomorrow as well. Also got hockey this weekend, best of three between Penn State and Minnesota in the Big Ten tournament, brand new format this year. Lady Lion basketball team's playing right now with Illinois in Indianapolis, trying to advance there to try and play Michigan tomorrow. And, of course, the Nittany Lion men's basketball team tomorrow will have Northwestern at the Garden beginning at 6:30. We're on at 6 o'clock tomorrow. The winner gets Ohio State on Friday at the same time and the same location. And tomorrow's show, again, will be from New York. So that's what we have coming up, and we're looking forward to it very much. So it'll be a big show tomorrow. We'll talk basketball with Joe Lenardi. We will talk wrestling with Jeff Byers on tomorrow's show from New York. Ben Jones in just a few moments. Let's talk about Combine and NFL Draft. When it comes to watching the NFL Draft, like, everybody does a really good job with it. So, you know, Trey Wingo does a really good job. I mean, Mel Kiper has his reputation, as does everyone else at ESPN doing a good job in the draft. My preference has been to watch NFL Network, not because it's anti-ESPN. It's just, it has nothing to do with that. You have to, you know, choose what fits what you want to watch. And Rich Eisen, of course, does a great job. But the difference maker for me is Mike Mayock. I just really like Mike Mayock, how he breaks it down. I think he gives you all the essential information as to why or why not someone is a really good prospect. Well, earlier this week, Mike had a conference call, and he was asked about several Penn State players. Obviously, you know, you get a generational player in a draft like Saquon Barkley.
Saquon Barkley is a transformational back, and I would put him in the same category as Fournette, Gurley, and Zeke Elliott, all of whom have been top 10 picks and made their teams better immediately. I would throw Quentin Nelson's
another guy you throw in there as well. All right, let's get to Deshaun Hamilton. Deshaun Hamilton was fortunate. He was able to get invited to the East-West Shrine Game. He did so well at the East-West Shrine Game, he then rolled that into a late invite to the Senior Bowl. And all he did was impress everyone, including Mike Mayock.
With Hamilton, in a 14-day period with the East-West Game and the Senior Bowl, he helped himself as much as anybody in the country. I mean, I thought he got better every day, which says a lot, and coaches love that. The ability to process information and then execute it on the field the next day. So the East-West game helped him. Then he came out the Senior Bowl. So he went from kind of a third-day afterthought to somebody that's now potentially a third-round pick.
Then there's Jason Kabinda and Marcus Allen. Jason Kabinda and Marcus Allen both helped themselves along the way, according to Mike Mayock.
Kabinda is a pro. Just works hard. Is not as naturally gifted as some of those linebackers that are going to run 4-5 at the combine. But I watched him at the East-West game. After every snap that he came off the field, he went right up to the defensive coordinator, had a conversation. When the slot goes in motion, what's the check? I mean, he's a true pro. He comes prepared to play. I think he's a two-down player with some physical limitations that's going to make a living on special teams. Marcus Allen is a safety that's great in the box. He'll strike you. He'll get after people in the run game. I think he's got some range in the pass game, and I think he can cover running backs and, to an extent, tight ends.
Right. Then after that, when it gets to wideouts, he thinks that's where Marcus Allen would struggle. But running backs and tight ends, he thinks Marcus Allen would be very good. And then, to be honest with you, he's essentially saying what Jack Ham and I have said for years about these players. I mean, Marcus Allen, terrific in the box. In fact, he really, in some ways, was like a fourth linebacker out there. Or when Penn State went 4-2-5, he was like the third linebacker out there for Penn State. Well, in the box, Marcus Allen isn't good. He's outstanding in the box. Covering a running back, no problem. Covering a tight end, no problem. Covering a wide out, that's where the problems come into play. But in the pros, they'll be able to slot him in sub packages, which will give him the matchups that benefit a defense. And he's right about Jason Kabinda. Kabinda is going to be a terrific special teams player who will then work his way into the lineup as a first and second down linebacker. He won't be a great third down linebacker. But as a first and second down linebacker, Kabinda will be very good. The one guy I didn't touch on is Mike Gesicki, and I know that Mike is third on Mike Mayock's draft board at the tight end spot, and that makes sense. For Mike, of course, it's the blocking part, but everything else, you know, catch radius, ability to go get the ball at the high point, ability to use his body like a basketball player, getting rebounding position. He does a great job of using his body to shield a defender to make a catch. Mike has good speed. Mike has really good leaping ability. And Mike is a guy that you will see play some tight end, but I wouldn't doubt play slot at times in the NFL. Mike's going to be a really good pro, Mike Gesicki. Really good pro. And, of course, Barkley's a generational player. It's Hamilton that's been interesting, because when Hamilton went to the All-Star games, he wowed everybody. He wowed everybody. And it's not just wowing everybody in the games themselves. It's wowing everybody with what he did in practice. I mean, that's a case where an all-star game, and in this case for Deshaun, two of them, really helped his draft stock. He'll be a slot receiver in the NFL that will move chains. That's what Deshaun Hamilton will end up doing. All right, let's get to, and we thank Mike Mayock, by the way, for the time he gave everybody on Monday, Mike Mayock from the NFL Network. All right, let's get to basketball now. Penn State will take on Northwestern opening game, Big Ten tournament. Actually, the second round, because the Big Ten tournament does begin today at Madison Square Garden. I think it's underway now as we speak. But Penn State is on day two. They get the first round bye. They get Northwestern, which also has a first round bye. tomorrow, 6:30 at the Garden. We're on beginning at 6 o'clock. Winner gets Ohio State in the Big Ten quarterfinals. With that, we bring in Ben Jones from statecollege.com. Ben, welcome. Thanks a lot for your time today.
Hey, Steve. Thanks for having me.
When Patrick went, now you can't do this the entire time, but when he went smaller, quicker, and pressed, what did you see on Sunday in the second half?
Yeah, I mean, I think you see a team that's harder to guard, and Pat mentioned that yesterday when we talked to him, and I think you see Penn State leaning on what its strength is, which is its athleticism, its quickness, and really just an ability for all of these guys to, you know, use that to their advantage. We've seen them in the past, they've pressed, and especially when you've got a guy like Josh Ruse, who's so good at forcing turnovers, you know, that really works to Penn State's advantage. And I think with Mike Watkins out of the lineup, you know, best we can tell for the foreseeable future, they were sort of non-committal on the Big Ten tournament. But I think anyone who saw his injury and anyone who has seen him sort of hobbling around campus at any point is kind of making the assumption that he's not going to be back in time for the tournament and, you know, whatever happens after that. Nevertheless, they've got to be creative. And I think when you press and you go small, and we saw a little bit against Michigan with Lamar Stevens at the five, all of these things, you know, it's really about putting your five best guys you've got at that point on the court and seeing what you can make of it. Because, you know, at the end of the day, Penn State is really one of the faster, one of the more athletic teams in the Big Ten. And they've got to think of creative ways to work around with not having Mike. And that was certainly one of them.
I was going to say, because, I mean, this isn't the best way of phrasing, but there's some parts of this they almost have to reinvent themselves.
Yeah, I mean, you when you lose a guy like Mike, and I think, you know, he's kind of interesting because we talk about Tony and Josh being sort of the two guys that are, you know, the most important players on the team in terms of scoring and sort of the emotional spark that Josh gives them. But Mike Watkins changes everything they do on both ends of the floor. So they've really got three different guys that all, in their own way, are the most important guy on the team. And when you lose a guy like Mike, especially the presence that he gives them in the paint on both ends, you know, you can't replace him, and you've got to figure out a way to be as successful as you were with him. And that's certainly something that's easier said than done.
Yeah, when you look at, you know, they already had Shep in the program. They recruited Reeves and Watkins in that class. Then the next one, of course, that's the Bostic, Carr, and Stevens group. Now you got Dredd and Bolden coming in. So that's 3 out of 4 years where you've got, because depth is on its way. But this team was built in a certain way, and the way it's been built, when you don't have a part, it does change things.
Yeah, it does. And, I mean, I think there's no doubt that, you know, when Pat has talked about his vision for the program, it is, and it's no coincidence that that sort of athleticism and size that the Villanova had, that it's sort of, we're going to be faster than you, we're going to be more athletic. And when you start to lose pieces, I think, you know, one of the things that the Penn State has struggled with this year is you look at the Michigan game, and I don't remember the exact point differential, but I think it was something like 36-6 that Michigan outscored Penn State's bench. I think Penn State's bench is great in relief in the sense that, you know that Nuzir is going to go out there and not make a lot of mistakes. You know that Jamari Wheeler is going to go out there and give Josh Reese some time off. But these guys are not really, at this point in their careers, really scorers. And I think when you lose a guy like Mike, you know, it really puts a stick in the wheel of everything that they try and do. But like you said, the guys they've got coming in next year, in theory, are going to give them more and more depth to work with, you know, not only just coming off the bench for relief, but also coming off the bench for scoring in a lot of different areas.
Right. That's what they're hoping that those guys will do, and the reports on them have been very good so far. For people maybe wondering, Penn State's bench on the season averages 11 points and 7 rebounds a game. Now, that's for the whole body of work. That includes everything from playing Ohio State to playing Coppin State. All right, so there are some days where obviously you're going to play Coppin State and the bench is going to put up numbers because they got a chance to play a lot more. Then there will be other games where they had 4 or 5 points. So when the aggregate is 11 points and 7 board game from the bench, which there's a domino effect here too. And I'll ask you about that. For example, I have a great closer. Closer gets hurt in baseball. So I take an excellent setup man and I make him the closer. Well, what's the problem? Who's the setup man? So what's the domino of Mike not being there in terms of how it shakes the dominoes up for Penn State, especially on its bench?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've seen over the past few games that they've had to get guys in there. I don't think that anyone, especially in the middle of the year, imagined just because of how it played out that You know, a guy like Satchel Pierce is going to play as much as he has now. And Julian Moore, you know, to his credit, I think Julian Moore has played some of his best basketball of his career the past 2 weeks.
And, yep.
You know, that's a good thing and a bad thing, I suppose, if you're Julian Moore. But at the end of the day, he's been plenty serviceable. But it messes up your rotations because, you know, they're really, at this point, you know, they're an injury away from, you know, one of these halftime raffles being for one of us to end up playing the five spot. And I think that's part of the reason why they put Lamar in there, because he is so physical and he is so strong, that he's a guy that can kind of get away with that for a little bit. I don't think it's going to work in the Big Ten tournament, but like we said a little bit ago, you know, the dominoes start to fall when a guy like that gets hurt because it messes up your rotations. It messes up what you're trying to do because Mike, you know, for as good as these other guys have played in his stead, I mean, he brings things to the table that these other guys simply, you know, and no disrespect to their work effort and anything, that he just does stuff that they can't do
right.
Because of that. You know, offensively and defensively, you just have to change your entire
game. He's an athletic freak. Hey, I've been doing this 36 years. They've had some pretty good big men here along the way. John Amici, Calvin Booth, players like that along the way. They've never had somebody like this that could do the, you know, all the things Mike does. There's certain things those other guys do better than Mike, but there are also several things Mike can do that even they, as big men, would look at and go, okay, I can't do that.
You're a defense going up against Penn State. You've got to give Mike Watkins that kind of respect, knowing what he's able to do. And I think, you know, I think Michigan was going to do it either way, but I think it's a good example of that when you take that piece out like that, you know, they know that they can go out and harass Tony Carr. They know they can double him. They know they can make life difficult for him. And for the first half of that game, it really worked to Michigan's advantage. And, you know, to Penn State's credit, they kind of figured things out in the second half in terms of how they wanted to attack that. But, you know, we talk about, you know, losing Mike Watkins from the perspective of who's going to be the five, but, you know, just in terms of the things that it opens up for defenses and the ways that it makes Penn State's offense harder, we talk about football, about how Saquon was able to be so successful because there are so many playmakers around him.
Right.
You know, some of Tony Carr's best games are when everybody else is scoring, and you take a guy like Mike off the court, it just makes it harder for everyone.
And then there's the other part with Northwestern. Scotty Lindsey's coming off a fabulous performance against Iowa. He had a career-high 32. He was 11 of 14 from the field, 9 of 11 in threes. But they're really banged up right now, too, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I saw this morning that, you know, they're maybe last night, that they're missing more people. It just seems like two teams that are kind of, you know, on their last leg to a certain extent. I know that Northwestern sort of finished the year a little rough, but, you know, you look around, you know, this season for Penn State, the number of games that they've played against teams that have been missing their, you know, one of their key players, Texas A&M, had a bunch of injuries when Penn State played them. We all know that Vince Edwards was out when they played at Purdue. You know, it looks like on paper one of those things that works to your advantage if you're Penn State, but at the same time, you know, I think Penn State's biggest issues, or at least the biggest obstacles they're going to have to hurdle, is much more what they're going to do on both ends of the floor and much less, you know, who Northwestern actually puts out on the court.
Right. Good point. Look forward to seeing you in New York. Thanks so much, Ben, as always.
Yep, thanks for having me, Steve.
Ben Jones, statecollege.com. We thank him very much for the time he gave us today. We'll see Ben in New York along with everybody else at Madison Square Garden. This is great, really, for the Penn State media. They really don't get an opportunity to cover Big Ten tournaments in Chicago and Indianapolis. Look, travel's prohibitive now. It's really tough for media to travel these days, because there's so many budget restrictions. Look, I'm lucky because I'm the play-by-play voice of a team that I get to go there, see it firsthand, get the observations, you know, and because of that, I'm able to bring the show there. That's the other part, too. I mean, think of all the places that we have taken the show. Well, we're able to go there because of my job with Penn State. It's really tough for media to travel. I've told the story about Red Smith's advice to a young sports writer out of Memphis 50 years ago. He said, "Can you give me advice on how to do this job?" And he said, two words, "Be there." Well, every media person worth their salt wants to be there. Look, not all of them do. Believe me, a lot of people like to just sit in the studio and just do this and not leave the studio and, you know, just say things to get you riled up and calling. But the vast majority are really good pros, and the vast majority do want to be there. They do want to cover it.
Well, it's been tough over the years for the Penn State media to cover the Big Ten tournament because it's been in Indianapolis and it's been in Chicago. That's not the easiest trip to make, especially on limited budgets. Well, last year was in Washington. A lot of the Penn State media went down. There's a lot of Penn State media that's going to be going to this because it's at Madison Square Garden. Now, next year it goes back to Chicago. So Penn State will have a really big media contingent there. They're also going to have a big fan contingent there because there is a bus of at least 50 students that will be going tomorrow to the Garden. And when the game's over, go back to State College. Oh, and by the way, if Penn State wins, they'll be back for Ohio State on Friday night in the Garden. So they'll be going back and forth on that bus. And so Penn State will have fans and a contingent there. It's going to be interesting to see how the games draw there. The first year that they had Super Saturday, it was Penn State and Michigan. Basketball in the afternoon and Penn State-Michigan hockey at night. Couldn't have done really much better. They drew over 12,000 for Penn State-Michigan basketball in the afternoon, and they drew, I think, between 12 and 13 for the hockey game that night. But that was back in 2014, 2015, maybe in 2015. Well, this year, Minnesota played Ohio State in basketball. Now, remember, Penn State-Michigan drew nearly 12,000 the first time they did this. Ohio State and Minnesota were there this year. They drew 4,800. So I'm going to be interested to see what the attendance is like. Now, four games tomorrow. I think the attendance will be really, really good tomorrow. It'll be very good tomorrow night with Penn State playing with the Penn State fans there. And then quarterfinal day is always the biggest attendance day anyway, which is on Friday. So we'll see. So tomorrow's show will be in New York. Joe Lenardi on tomorrow's show to talk about bracketology. Jeff Byers on wrestling tomorrow. Big Ten Championships at Michigan State this weekend. We look forward to it. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK.